He knew well the futility of trying to contend against witches, so he gave up, discouraged. But it occurred to him that he might as well have the marble he had just thrown away, and therefore he went and made a patient search for it, but he could not find it. Now he went back to his treasure house and carefully placed himself just as he had been standing when he tossed the marble away. Then he took another marble from his pocket and tossed it in the same way, saying, "Brother, go find your brother." He watched where it stopped and went there and looked. But it must have fallen short or gone too far, so he tried twice more. The last repetition was successful. The two marbles lay within a foot of each other. Just here, the blast of a toy tin trumpet came faintly down the green aisles of the forest. Tom flung off his jacket and trousers, turned a suspender into a belt, raked away some brush behind the rotten log, disclosing a rude bow and arrow, a lath sword, and a tin trumpet, and in a moment had seized these things and bounded away bare-legged with fluttering shirt. He presently halted under a great elm, blew an answering blast, and then began to tiptoe and look warily out, this way and that. He said cautiously to an imaginary company, "Hold, my merry men, keep hid till I blow." Now appeared Joe Harper, as airily clad and elaborately armed as Tom. Tom called,
"Hold! Who comes here into Sherwood Forest without my pass?"
"Guy of Gisborne wants no man's pass. Who art thou that
dares to hold such language?" said Tom, prompting, for they talked by the book from memory.
"Who art thou that dares to hold such language?"
"I, indeed, I am Robin Hood, as thy caitiff carcass soon shall know."
"Then art thou indeed that famous outlaw? Right gladly will I dispute with thee the passes of the merry wood. Have at thee."
They took their lath swords, dumped their other traps on the ground, struck a fencing attitude, foot to foot, and began a grave, careful combat, two up and two down. Presently Tom said, "Now if you got the hang, go it lively." So they went it lively, panting and perspiring with the work. By and by Tom shouted,
"Fall, fall, why don't you fall?"
"I shan't. Why don't you fall yourself? You're getting the worst of it."
"Why, that ain't anything. I can't fall. That ain't the way it is in the book. The book says, 'Then with one back-handed stroke, he slew poor Guy of Gisborne.' You're to turn around and let me hit you in the back."
There was no getting around the authorities, so Joe turned, received the whack, and fell.
"Now," said Joe, getting up, "you got to let me kill you. That's fair."
"Why, I can't do that. It ain't in the book."
"Well, it's blame mean, that's all."
"Well, say, Joe, you can be Friar Tuck or Much the Miller's son and lamb me with a quarterstaff, or I'll be the Sheriff of Nottingham and you be Robin Hood a little while and kill me."
This was satisfactory, and so these adventures were carried out. Then Tom became Robin Hood again and was allowed by the treacherous nun to bleed his strength away through his neglected wound. And at last Joe, representing a whole tribe of weeping outlaws, dragged him sadly forth, gave his bow into his feeble hands, and Tom said,
"Where this arrow falls, there bury poor Robin Hood under the greenwood tree."
Then he shot the arrow and fell back and would have died, but he lit on a nettle and sprang up too gaily for a corpse. The boys dressed themselves, hid their accoutrements, and went off grieving that there were no outlaws anymore, and wondering what modern civilization could claim to have done to compensate for their loss. They said they would rather be outlaws a year in Sherwood Forest than president of the United States forever.